Welcome to the podcast of America This Week, courtesy of the Catholic Channel on Sirius XM 129. If you want to listen to more of America This Week, subscribe to Sirius XM and tune in on Wednesdays at 1 p.m. Eastern to the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129.
Thanks to our sponsor, Villanova University. Villanova's Center for Church Management and Business Ethics offers educational programs for individuals in church leadership and administrative roles who are seeking to become better stewards of church resources by improving their business and management skills. Learn more at villanova.edu.
We are talking today with Christiana Peppert, who is a professor at Fordham University, and she is the author of Just Water, Theology, Ethics, and the Global Water Crisis.
Yes, and she is a graduate of Stanford University, and where she did her degree in biology and then went on to earn a doctorate in theology from Yale. And her book, the full title is Just Water, Theology, Ethics, and the Global Water Crisis, came out in January 2014, and she continues to lecture around the country on ethics of resource extraction and the connections between religion and science, and of course, fresh water. We want to welcome Professor Peppert.
Thank you, gentlemen. It's great to be here in person.
And I see you have some water in front of you. Very important to remain hydrated, right?
Absolutely.
Particularly during a live broadcast.
It's a performance of generosity on the part of many hosts frequently to hand over a bottle of water to a guest,
right.
And I so appreciate the gesture, but you'll notice that it is unopened.
Unopened, right.
There you go. So, why don't you tell us a bit about the thesis of this work?
Right. Well, Just Water came out of a number of threads of my own personal interest and expertise. One, on a very personal level, and something that a lot of listeners might be able to relate to, is how the landscapes and the water in those landscapes that we grow up in shapes our sense of abundance, shapes our sense of what water should be used for. So I grew up on the arid plains of Colorado. I was actually born in the arid Central Valley of California. Mm-hmm. And that's a place where you see scarcity, you see dryness, you see aridity, and you see the value of water in day-to-day life because it is not abundant. Mm-hmm. So then moving to the East Coast for graduate school, I was stunned at how, in a sense, profligate societies were with water and how much it was invisible and in the background because it's everywhere. And so that thread of my own personal interest and personal background then coalesced with the studies I was doing in ethics, especially ethics in a time of globalization,
right,
and looking at the moral resources within the Catholic Church and Catholic tradition, especially Catholic social teaching.
Right.
So the book, then, to get to your question, as a professor, I'm really good at talking for long periods of time.
That's right.
Yeah.
Who was it that said the definition of a professor is someone who talks for 60 minutes, right?
Oh, ouch, ouch.
No, I'm just teasing.
Leaving the mind sufficiently tangled always to tease out some greater meaning, of course. The thesis of the book is basically that water, which has for so long in so many places been taken for granted or invisible, particularly in highly developed or industrialized nations, is a basic substrate of life,
right,
and it is not always evenly distributed by nature or by societies. And in an era of economic globalization, there are a range of forces, political, economic, social, that bear further investigation. And my argument, essentially, is that water is a moral and an ethical issue. In some chapters, I even talk about how it's a theological issue because it is a very basis for existence. It's now been deemed a fundamental human right by the UN as well as the Magisterium of the Catholic Church,
mm-hmm,
because it undergirds foundational forms of human dignity.
Yeah. Yeah, that seems like a very basic fact, but I think one worth emphasizing is that, and maybe you can answer this question, how does water aid in the process of human development?
Let's see, I can do it in 140 characters. Without water, there is nothing.
Yeah.
Right?
So those of us who can turn on the tap 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and brush our teeth with it, drink it, give our children showers with it, it's not a big deal. But as we saw here in the U.S., even in West Virginia last year with the Elk River debacles and various other contamination scenarios that have gone on, the minute that people realize that the water coming out of their tap is contaminated, there's an existential threat there. So
there's
the bodily level, that what we take in becomes us. And if it's contaminated, well, we'll get sick. People worldwide die from untreated water and insufficient sanitation. And then there are broader levels of development that all sorts of economic performance and capacity building the ability to have girls in particular be educated is often premised upon a sufficient fresh water supply because, as has been the default case in many societies worldwide, when water is scarce and someone must go to get it, it's usually a gendered burden. It's women and it's girl children, most often. And so there then become enshrined disproportionate kinds of burdens onto girls and women who are not able to be educated. And as many social scientists have pointed out, the attainment of equality for girls and women and education is a component of development more generally.
Absolutely. Well, you're listening to America This Week, and our guest is Dr. Christiana Peppert, and we're talking about her book, Just Water, Theology, Ethics, and the Global Water Crisis. You can join the conversation at 888-322-8465. That's 888-322-8465. What role does water or its abundance or scarcity play in your own life and in your own thinking about your faith, perhaps? Professor, I was wondering if one of the things that really struck me when you began to answer our first question was that you began with your own experience. And one of the things that I really liked about this work was the methodology, right? It's not only you not only draw on several disciplines, right, and have these disciplines and talking to one another, but I believe you actually say in here, you know, theology in the 21st century, it has to be embodied, right? It has to account for people's experience. It has to begin from below and work up. And that, I think, is because you might just say, well, what is this kind of a theology of water, right? And if it's speculative and way up here, then you're what is the point of that, right? But what you're saying is that this is a fundamental part of our anatomy, it's part of our chemistry, it's everywhere in our lives. It's a symbol that is throughout the scripture, it's throughout our sacraments, every time we walk into a church, right? And we need to begin with that experience.
Absolutely. Thanks, Father Malone. That was a really nice layout of some of the multiplicities and dimensions that water holds, both materially and also symbolically. I've found that starting with my own experience is important, partly because it's just honest in terms of my epistemology and how I come to think about water. But it also is the fact that while all of us can think about water in the abstract, whether that is mediated through texts like the Bible, whether that is mediated through liturgical substances like holy water, whether that is mediated through the practice of being a hydrogeologist, we all have different frames that we can put on water. And at the same time, we all have some fundamental kinds of embodied relationships to it. Mm. And this is a dimension that I find to be experientially true. I also think that it dovetails nicely, as I point out in the first chapter of the book, with some themes in Catholic social teaching and Catholic theology more generally in the late 20th century, post-Vatican II, especially post-1970s with more of a focus on environmental questions, that look at the well-being of people in their embodied fullness, their entire reality, not just conceptually or the state of their soul as it might have been conceived in prior generations, but rather how are people doing on measures of their flourishing. And the term that Catholic social teaching has, at least since 1967, given to that is the idea of integral development, that this is of the full person, that, yes, faith is a matter on which the Catholic Church has had lots to say over the centuries, but faith in action is ethics, and there are social and collective and economic and political obligations to help people achieve the bases of human dignity, and water's one of them.
Yeah, and ultimately our faith is not an idea because our faith is in a person. Right?
We live.
And so it has to be embodied for us.
Right. Right. I think theologically the incarnation is something that a lot of people who take on a more systematic theological register really have said, oh, I wish you had drawn that out more in the book. And,
right.
you know, that's great. They can take up that project.
Now, I wonder how you bring this home to your students when you're teaching, and maybe people coming from the East Coast don't have that experience. How do you get this across? Am I correct? You don't allow bottled water in your class, for example?
Yes, yes, you're correct. So, you know, a syllabus, it's like the Magna Carta of a professor's classroom. It's where I decree what shall be. And on the whole, I am not overly authoritarian, but there are some things upon which I absolutely insist. One is no ad hominem in class debates and discussions. Give your conversation partners the benefit of the doubt. Another absolutely non-negotiable rule is that you cannot bring bottled water into the classroom, or rather, you can bring it into the classroom. But once we've gone through a video and a series of conversations about why this is, you subject yourself to being the object of critique, peer critique, should you do so. So it's a conscientization measure that is a little tiny drop in the bucket, but it's an example of exercising awareness about where our water comes from and who benefits from it and who bears the burdens.
And why is that? What is the issue with bottled water? Is it that it treats water as a commodity, that it's not environmentally friendly, or all of the above?
All of the above. Look, let me say, if you're in the middle of a cholera epidemic,
right,
if there is a place where there is not infrastructure, if there are a variety of needs, you know, the Elk River spill, all these kinds of things, yes, bottled water can be a very important emergency element. Mm-hmm. However, it is something that in the book I describe as having become, since the 1990s, a fetishized commodity. Mm-hmm. It becomes something that we just buy because it's what other people do. There are some bottled waters that are status symbols. And there are a range of issues that flow into it. One is on the environmental front. Water is often taken from a range of places and then trucked all over tarnation in plastic bottles that require a lot of fossil fuels to produce and then don't degrade in any meaningful time frame.
Right.
So there's the plastic and fossil fuels issue. And there is also, as you pointed out, this issue of who owns the water,
right,
that can be extracted and who profits from it.
Mm-hmm.
Should it be multinational corporations? I personally think no, particularly for a fetishized, superfluous commodity, which, mm-hmm, I would argue that in many cases, and in the U.S., in most places, bottled water is. Now, this is a debate that really crested in the 1990s and 2000s. There was a lot of fierce argumentation among multinational corporations and water justice advocates and human rights activists about whether water should be considered as an economic commodity or a human right. And
right.
Chapter 3 in the book talks about this.
Exactly.
And so that raised a lot of interesting tensions and complexities about thinking not only about water, but also environmental goods and property rights and profit and
right,
political economy in the 21st century. I try in the book, in a more nuanced way, to untangle some of the threads of the types of moral questions that are being asked there.
Sure.
For whom are the goods of the earth intended?
Right.
Who should have access to them?
Right.
Who should own them? Should people profit from them?
All right. Well, we need to take a quick break. But when we come back, we hope you will join the conversation at 1-888-322-8465. That's 888-3-CATHOLIC. And we're talking with Christiana Peppert about her book, Just Water, Theology, Ethics, and the Global Water Crisis. And one question that I have for when we come back after the break is, can it be both? Can it be a commodity and a human right? And is there a way to accommodate that? It's kind of how we approach healthcare in this country. But in any event, when we come back on America This Week, the conversation continues. Stay with us.
Now back to America This Week, live with Father Matt Malone and Carrie Weber.
This is Tim Reedy sitting in for Carrie Weber this week, and Father Matt Malone and I talking with Dr. Christiana Peppert about her new book, Just Water, came out last year, and specifically about the issues of environment and fresh water. We invite you to join the conversation at 1-888-3-CATHOLIC. That's 1-888-322-8465. And we're going to jump off on that question that you just asked, Father Malone, which is the tension between water being a human right versus an economic commodity. Dr. Peppert, is it either or can it be a tension there?
Well, I'm a professor, so I don't really do either or, and I'm an ethicist, so for crying out loud, no. Right. But, you know, here's what that debate really reveals. It reveals that water is something that is so important to human beings that we will expend massive amounts of energy in trying to define what kind of thing water is. So, yeah, water is H2O, but it's more than that complicated molecule. It's a liturgical substance, and in recent years, as we discussed prior to the break, it's been subject to debate over whether it is best viewed as an economic commodity, and thus something subject to the workings of market environmentalism for distribution, for supply, etc., or whether it's a human right. Now, in 2010, the United Nations said, the General Assembly affirmed that access to fresh water and sanitation at fundamental levels is a human right. As we all know, the implementation of human rights is fraught with difficulties. And in many ways, I think that in a pluralistic, globalized society, the language of human rights is one kind of moral vernacular that makes universal aspirations, right? It makes sense on bodily levels, and it tries to communicate what we share in terms of our needs. What's fascinating is that, fascinating to me at least, and hopefully to a lot of our listeners, is that since at least 2003, the Catholic Church has chimed in very strongly with letters from the Holy See to a range of global entities involved in debates about water, saying, you know what? Access to fresh water is a fundamental human right before it is an economic commodity.
Right.
That's really important. That's a really neat kind of moral witness that has only begun to come, I think, into fuller media attention with the popularity of this pope.
And it doesn't mean that it can in no way be an economic commodity.
Exactly.
But our starting place has to be, this is a human right.
Well, and, you know, even if you don't start there, I think that the question of water and its value and what kind of thing it is not a linear kind of question. Mm-hmm. It is, as I said, it is H2O. It is all those kinds of things. And absolutely, it's an economic good in that it is often treated as an economic good. It's subject to a range of market forces and market environmentalism factors. And that's just reality. You know, I'm a pragmatist. We live in the world we live in. I think what the discourse of human rights and then the Catholic Church beyond that, as well as a range of water justice advocates are trying to say is that the value of water should not be remanded entirely to the market. That's mm-hmm. dangerous
right.
because the market is not attuned to questions of equity or basic human need.
Mm-hmm.
It's attuned to other values, and those values are prevalent. But guess what? There are some fundamental values that need to undergird our relations with one another and with the natural world.
We have to bring a moral compass
absolutely.
To our economic decision making.
Absolutely. And you know, we've seen Pope Francis talking about this in a range of conversational styles and a range of documents. And I think that's a lot of the hype about this upcoming encyclical that you mentioned is there has not been a pope who has taken on the environment as a central issue in an encyclical. Don't get me wrong, the environment has come up,
sure.
but to have it be the focus and to see how he engages that issue theologically, economically, ethically, from a position of political economy with questions of gender,
right.
it's going to be really, really interesting to see. And that, you know, the bit about Boehner inviting the Pope to Congress and seeing the ways in which the Pope as head of state performs in that context will be very interesting
right.
indeed.
It'll be after the encyclical, so that'll be still
right.
in the air.
Right. right. And this encyclical, I mean, now Father Malone, you're an insider, what with being the head of this multi-platform media ministry. Oh, trust me, I'm an expert. But you know, I've heard a range of speculations, and the latest I've heard about this encyclical is that it will probably be sometime, you know, after Easter, midsummer. I gotta be honest, I was secretly in my heart hoping that it would be a week from today, that it would be on Ash Wednesday, because wouldn't that be a liturgically propitious time
Indeed.
To get Catholics thinking about this? So if you just have any particular clout in that realm, just let them know.
Particularly since the response to the reality that we recognize on Ash Wednesday, our own sinfulness, is the waters of baptism, right? So I agree with you.
Oh,
so
thank you.
I'll put in a word for that.
I'll put that in my tenure file.
You're listening to America This Week on the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129. We are talking about water with Christiana Pepard. And Brian from Connecticut is on the line. Brian, welcome to America This Week.
Oh, thanks very much for taking my call.
What is your question?
You bring up an interesting point, and one of the things that I struggle with as a trying to be a faithful Catholic and trying to take care of God's resources, such as water, is when people bring up things such as health care or contraception being rights. My typical response is, well, the rights are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. If you say a product is a right, whether it be water or contraception or whatnot, my next question tends to be is, okay, so if it's a right that you have to have it, then you're requiring somebody else to give it to you. So water needs to be purified and needs to be, you know, maybe brought to you. Just like something like healthcare, we can't require a doctor to perform a duty on you. How can we say that water is a right? It's something that I struggle with.
Sure.
How can we say that it's a right?
And Brian, let me ask you a question. If we bracket the questions of contraception and healthcare and all the rest, could we say that these things that are fundamentally needed for human existence, water, food, and clean air, why couldn't we say that those are human rights? I mean, you can't even be human without them.
Correct. I agree.
Okay. Dr. Pepperd?
Those are great questions, Brian, and I think it points to the salience of how Father Malone's question, you know, is water an economic commodity or a human right, or is it both? Your question gets to the heart of that, because as many people rightly point out, if we are going to have water that is purified, that goes through any kind of infrastructure that for which various diversions are built, whether they're weirs or canals or the massive plumbing infrastructure in New York City where I live, someone's got to pay for it. So how is that burden carried? And, you know, This delves into the realm of anecdote, forgive me, but one of the chapters in my book is about the Jordan River and the various meanings of water that circulate around that very storied land. And this was in about 2008 that I went there on a research trip and had the opportunity to meet with a group of hydrologists and some environmental workers and the then Minister of Water of the Kingdom of Jordan, who admittedly has a really tough job in an arid climate, making sure that everyone gets their water. And he said that a number of farmers in the area were constantly saying, but water is a gift from God. It is a human right. We shouldn't have to pay for it. And his argument was, I understand that. I would never want to deny anyone water because it is a gift. It is something that we fundamentally rely upon. But how do we get the water to you? Right. That's what you're paying for. You're paying for the service. And I really think that these kinds of questions about the balancing of political, economic, and infrastructural realities with the moral insights brought to us by a range of these traditions is the next phase of global conversation about issues like water.
Well said. Brian, thank you for the call.
Now, I want to talk a bit about the, you know, as I said, the divisive issue of fracking. I think this is very interesting because you've got the tension here between, you know, the fracking and the natural gas resources that's helping perhaps to drive down the market, the price of gas, which is, of course, dear to the heart of so many Americans. But there's a tension here because this could affect our water supply. So you've got, you know, which is more important to us, you know, when it comes down to it. We would say water, of course, but, you know, it's going to be an interesting debate to see how this plays out.
And actually, just for our listeners who may not know, a quick definition of what fracking is.
Absolutely. All right. So for those not living in the Marcellus Shale region or parts of California, fracking is the high volume, high intensity injection of a mixture of sand, water, and a variety of chemicals, often those chemicals are proprietary or trade secrets that do not need to be disclosed. And the injection of those that solution, rather, into various geological formations to extract natural gas or forms of oil. So this has led to what many people, including David Brooks from the New York Times and many, many others, say is America's natural gas boom, that it represents, this is a quote, it represents the promised land. It has the potential, in the view of some, to afford energy independence, which is a good matter of national security, among other things. So it is an economic boon in some ways. It is a move towards a form of energy independence, though also admittedly a fossil fuel-based form of energy independence. And one of the complicating factors has to do with water. How does water figure into fracking? A couple of ways. Number one, copious amounts of water are used to inject into the earth. The solution is very high volume. Once that water is mixed with the chemicals and sand, it is exceedingly difficult to purify. I won't say it's impossible. All you engineers, you get on it, you figure out how to purify fracking water, you will be gazillionaires. But at present, that water is called produced water and flowback, and it is often then relegated to lined containment pits. It can't be consumed or swum in or dived into. And there's actually been some grumbling recently from California, where various environmental regulators permitted various aspects of the fossil fuel industry to inject fluids into aquifers, which are underground formations of water. And so one question then is about what's in the fracking fluids, the fracking solutions, and are those things toxic? And if so, in what ways?
Right. Important questions.
Yeah.
We have another caller, Ken from Detroit. You are on America This Week.
Hello. Thank you for taking me. This question is more or less based on the last visit we had during Missionary Sunday, where we did have a priest from Africa, and especially an area where Boko Haram was been fairly active. But how is water being used as a political and even terrorist type of threat? One group, according to the priest, and I just go off his anecdotal information, that a lot of times when some of the radical Muslim groups come in, they will give you water, but they force you to convert. And sometimes it's a competition between other groups to get water for everyone there versus, you know, other groups that want to come in with different agendas.
Great question, Ken. Water is a weapon, Dr. Pepper.
It's a great question, and I appreciate and am very sobered by your phrasing of it, because so many people nowadays are keen to ask, are there going to be wars fought in the future over water? But what your question really nicely points out is that water is already a tool that can be used towards violence. Alternatively, many people would point out, such as Aaron Wolf, who is a transboundary water negotiator, that in most cases in the world, water has been directed towards aims of cooperation and peace precisely because it is so vital. But what you bring up, Ken, is that when there are groups that have control of certain resources and deny them to subgroups on the basis of creedal statements or on the basis of ethnic issues or on whatever basis you want, it is a deep injustice, and it can be used as a tool of war. And over time, it absolutely has been.
And also, and obviously, in a theological context, to withhold the basic means of life from someone is a grave sin.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So we have a couple minutes left, Dr. Pepper. Tell us where we can find your book, and also, you know, where can we find more resources to learn about this stuff?
Well, thank you, Father Malone. You can find the book wherever books are sold.
Wherever
good books are sold.
Where is that these days?
Well, you know, I have my favorite little independent purveyors. The book is published by Orbis Books, which is a press that does some really great work on theology, social ethics, a range of issues. So if you go to their website, you can order it through there. Yeah, you know, choose your other favorite online purveyors. I'm not going to give any shout outs to them at the moment. But I would also say that I'm on Twitter. So if you want to continue these conversations, I regularly tweet out things, as does America Magazine, at the intersection of everyday life, environmentalism, faith, these kinds of questions. And, you know, I'm also really happy to say that I have another book. It's a co-edited volume, so I compiled and helped envision it, but I did not write it. And it is called Just Sustainability: Ecology, Technology, and Resource Extraction. It's co-edited with a Jesuit who now teaches at Boston College. And I'm really proud of it because it has striven to bring that combination of locality and globality to the table. Mm-hmm. And we have authors from nearly 20 countries and 6 continents writing about the intersection of place and theology and ethics and the structures of global environmental degradation.
Terrific.
And that comes out in a month.
In a month. Wow. Holy Toledo. Well, we'll have to have you back to talk about that.
We should say your Twitter handle is at Prof.
Thank you.
Peppard, right?
At Prof. Peppard.
At Prof.
Yes.
Peppard, right. And the book is Just Water, Theology, Ethics, and the Global Water Crisis. Our guest has been Christiana Peppard, the author and professor at Fordham University. Dr. Peppard, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you. It's been a real pleasure.
Thank you for listening to the podcast of America This Week, courtesy of the Catholic Channel on SiriusXM 129. If you want to hear the full show every week, subscribe to SiriusXM and tune in on Wednesdays at 1 p.m. Eastern to the Catholic Channel, SiriusXM 129.